Well, welcome to the podcast. This is A Chat with Hank, and I'm Hank Multala. This podcast is going to bring some real insights to veterans, non-veterans, and business owners. First, if you're not a veteran, or you may be a business owner that is trying to develop, let's say, a better consciousness or thankfulness or a more engaging work environment for your associates that are veterans or for the prospective ones in the future, I promise you'll get some real detailed personal insights on the changes that veterans experience in their individual transition out of the military. And if you're a veteran, I know a lot of the subjects we touch on will be quite familiar to you. So my next guest, we got to know each other through LinkedIn when I posted about the USS Lincoln for being the first deployment of the F-35 strike fighter, and more importantly, for being the first time a carrier has a female commanding officer, Captain Amy Bauernschmidt. And forgive me if I mispronounced her name. And a guest commented that his son is presently stationed on the Lincoln, and I happen to know someone whose son is one of the F-35 pilots on board. So we began our chat on LinkedIn and then grabbed some time, and I thought, you know what, he would be a great guest as he does help a great deal on the corporate side. But the one aspect he's very committed to is helping veterans transition from military service into the civilian world. So I got to walk down a discussion path with a fellow veteran, a soldier, not a squid. So today I have the privilege to spend some time with Bill Kiefer. Bill is the founder of Kiefer & Associates, where he specializes in military veteran career transition. He helps out with executive coaching and strategic talent management. And he recently released the book, Military Career Transition Insights from the Employer's Side of the Desk, which debuted as a number one new release on Amazon's job hunting category in July of 2021. And I've provided a link to the book and his firm to the within the podcast description. And no, we don't get a kickback from any book sales. Besides some personal banter, we detail both of our experiences in transitioning out of the military, some very similar experiences, as well as uninformed perceptions by those who have never served. And it's not so surprising that a lot of those perceptions still exist. We go into his background in a bit more detail, what inspired him to develop the business, how he has helped coach veterans into their civilian transition. But I think the best content in our discussion is he shares a number of wonderful insights and ideas that benefit businesses and business leaders and managers who may be looking for ways to better the environment, the culture, increase their understanding and awareness, as well as their engagement with current and potential veteran employees. Bill's appeared on other podcasts. He's authored numerous other articles and has been profiled in a few books. Again, and forgive me for repeating myself, if you're not a veteran, or let's say you're a business owner that is trying to develop a healthier awareness and appreciation and more engaging experience and atmosphere for veterans, you'll get some really detailed personal insights on the apprehensions and changes that a lot of veterans are likely experiencing or have experienced in their personal evolution from service to country into the corporate community. And just a reflection I want to share, and I know people are aware of this, but it still needs to be stated clearly. The foundations, the pillars, and the expectations and the changes veterans go through does not necessarily get erased by the calendar. The feelings and the conflicts from transition may still linger for years. So a lot of those feelings and thoughts that existed may still persist. And if you are a veteran who may have experienced challenges or questions regarding the transition approach, I know a lot of the discussion, you may be familiar with the same attitudes and beliefs that Bill and I chat about throughout our time together. And I bring you a chat with Bill Kiefer. Well, I'm here with Bill Kiefer. Bill, thanks for taking some time out to chat.
Oh, thank you, Hank. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I appreciate it. So no military rivalry here, huh? Soldier talking to a squid. How wonderful is this going to be?
I think we're going to have some fun with it.
I think so, too. So hey, I really appreciate your time getting connected. And I know listeners will really take away some great knowledge and hopefully open their eyes to some new information. And, you know, as often as I do, I always start off on a personal note, and we'll also finish there. So let me start off, and you'll see exactly what this is leading to. So as a teenager, because we're both veterans, so, you know, as a teenager, I got lost for about 18 months in high school. I was smoke pot, but I was a big hockey player and a lacrosse player, and I realized, hey, I wasn't ready for college. But one probably mature decision I made, or realization I came to when I was a teenager, was my parents immigrated from Sweden back in 1968. And I felt the need to return some sort of service or obligation to the United States or the country for the opportunities my parents were given. So I enlisted in the Navy, and then while on active duty, I got a full scholarship for college and got my engineering degree and then got commissioned as a zero. But unfortunately, and much earlier than I had expected, I left the service due to military issues. So, and then I started my career in finance and stuff. So let's go back a bit. And if you don't mind sharing, talk to us about your background, why you joined the military, and then we can get into your company in a bit.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to do that, Hank. So in high school, I was kind of I did a little bit of everything. I was an athlete. I was a wrestler. I threw shot put. I did a variety of things. But I was also in the band, and I was in the school That's plays, okay. And I was in the Latin club. And I just did a variety of things. And I always worked also through that. I live in farm country. So, you know, I did mm-hmm. agricultural work. I did, you know, threw bales and, you know, sprayed pesticides before it was probably safe to do, and, you know, did all those kind of things. And I always wanted to join the military. As a kid, I wanted to be a drill sergeant because I love the hat. I mean, it sounds silly, right. But I was a kid, right? My dad, who's an Army veteran, he was an Army doctor for years right after the Korean War. He goes, you know, if you're going, why don't you go as an officer? So I said, yeah, okay, whatever. I didn't know the difference. I thought maybe I could still wear the cool hat. What did I know? I was a dumb kid, right? So anyway, I wound up at the University of Toledo, went through the ROTC program there, and went on active duty. So I was branched ordnance. So I was a logistics guy, mm-hmm. spent most of my time out with light infantry divisions. I was with the 7th Infantry Division back during the Panama invasion, if you remember back that time. Spent a little time in Honduras doing some things, supporting national interests, et cetera. Went off to the officer advanced course, and they sent me to Fort Drum, New York, to work mm-hmm. with the 10th Mountain Division.
Up near Watertown.
Watertown, that's right.
Yeah.
Great unit. Very honored to have served with them. We did Hurricane Andrew, if you recall that. Horrible mm-hmm. hurricane went to South Dade. We were running relief camps and doing a bunch of work down there. And shortly on the heels of that, we wound up doing Operation Restore Hope in Somalia.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a great experience. So you said your dad was a physician in the Army?
Correct.
Fantastic. What kind?
General practice.
Mm-hmm. Well, which meant he did everything.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So, that's fantastic. So, yeah. So if you don't mind, let's jump into this. So give us an overview of Kiefer & Associates.
Yeah, great. It's an independent coaching and advisory firm that I started in mm-hmm. 2018 with a primary focus on helping bridge the gap between the military culture and the civilian culture. I have a few streams of work, but my real passion piece and where I spend most of my effort is with the veterans. So I work with individual veterans to help prepare them, service members and veterans, to help prepare them for this new kind of strange work world. And I also do work with employers to mm-hmm. help them understand the potential value add that veterans might bring to their business environment. So I also still do strategic talent management, which is what I did for 22 years in big corporations. I do some public speaking, and I'm a certified leadership executive coach.
Okay, yeah, we'll get into all that. So, you know, obviously, I really enjoy podcasts because you just get a lot more detail than a website's going to provide. And I wanted also to get a better understanding of what attracted you to this role of, you know, working with organizations and individuals and guidance and support and just creating and developing, you know, talent that really maximizes individual and organizational results. I know why you'd want to work with veterans. So, you know, how did your career lead you to what you're doing now?
Yeah, no, great question. You know, and this really was a realization that I came up with when I was in the military. You know, I had spent time as a battalion operations officer. I'd been a commander. I mean, did all the right jobs. And regardless of the job, I was always fascinated by the rigor that the military, in my case, the Army, but I assume you saw it in the Navy, that the rigor that the services put in to training and preparing service members for the jobs they're going to do and the environment they're going to do it in. It just fascinated me.
Yeah.
So when I got out, it was a natural draw for me. So, you know, is there a way that I can find a career field or a job function or, you know, even a job, if you just want to call it a job, where I can help, the phrase I've used for years, optimize talent capability for people and organizations. And I was blessed to roll into roles that do that.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really great. So I've reviewed, you know, everything you've done, and I think I mentioned to you on the phone that I probably because of military and maybe because of my engineering degree, but you know, I like a lot of structure to from my perspective, you know, on what I'm doing on this side of the microphone to podcast. But I just after I looked at everything you've done and when we had our discussions, you know, I just thought, you know what, I just want to talk to Bill, you know, just kind of make it an open forum and, you know, address specific areas as they may come up. But since we're both, you know, since we're both veterans, I do see this conversation being probably loaded to that side of our similar background. So how do you work? Tell me how you work with employers specifically and what is your approach?
Yeah. So my current work is focused on, like I said, helping bridge that culture gap between the civilian work world and military veterans. And when I work with employers, I've got an 8-step process that I built and used, and I've been using it for a long time. I approach this topic of veteran employment and hiring as a business decision. Oftentimes, I find that employers are well-intended, and sometimes they have this, hey, we really, you know, we're very patriotic, and we want to support the veterans, and we want to do great things to recognize the veteran. But they don't always understand what the business case is beyond the good intent. So I always start with, what's the business case? What's the opportunity you're trying to seize by considering veteran hiring and employment? Or what's the challenge you're trying to overcome? And and we work through that first. And, you know, there's, as you can imagine, myriad different ways and reasons why they might want to do it. And I tell them that if they're really doing this just to say thanks and feel good about, you know, their efforts, that's probably not the best business decision.
Right.
So once I, once we get through that, I said, then, you know, how ready is your organization for veterans to join? Because, you know, I imagine you've seen this, you know, there are great supporters of the military and veterans, and there are many
folks
that
are kind of neutral.
But there are folks out there that are not supportive of and actively anti.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So when our businesses, when I work in businesses, you know, what's the business case, but what's the status of your organization? The people in it, what's the culture like? And if this is a business important thing you need to do, then we need to deal with the organizational culture too.
Right.
So,
right. So have you found that you work in, you know, do you work across a lot of different corporations and different industries, or have you found that through the course of your, you know, bringing out Kiefer & Associates now, you said 2018, so, you know, 4+ years, has it fallen more into specific industries themselves?
I'm getting a little bit more interest in manufacturing related businesses. Maybe that's just geography. You know, I'm in the Midwest, you know, but interesting. It's very broad. I actually have a new set of conversations going on with a funeral home group.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, it does vary.
Any specific reason why, or there was just an interest by that type of industry?
The the particular potential client here, and I haven't signed him yet, but the particular potential client was interested in having folks come in that are a little seasoned, that maybe have mm-hmm. some experience, that are professional and respectful and know how to comport themselves well in challenging times. And they thought,
that's a great description of the military, of veterans.
Yeah. So, but it's broad and it varies. I mean, I've talked to financial institutions and various service companies and transportation folks. It varies, but perhaps, like I said, because of just geography and proximity, I'm getting a little more interest in manufacturing and manufacturing related industry.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was going to go into here in a bit and talk about, you know, how you coach veterans, but so I want to get into some specifics here, but also wanted again to get your personal experience on transition. I know when I left the service, and I don't know if I recognized it right away, but I'm guessing 3 or 4 years after I left, because I left in about 2000 when I was 27 or 28. Mm-hmm. I actually tried to go back in, but because of my medical condition, I would not. Even if I signed all the waivers and everything, they wouldn't let me come back in. But, you know, because of asthma, I thought, yeah, there's really a lot of allergens out at sea, isn't there?
Yeah.
So, you know, when I left, and again, it took me a while, but I kind of experienced, you know, transition change. And, you know, there was kind of that loss of responsibility. There was that loss of purpose, that construct, which to me is engaging. I enjoy it. But I also realized being in corporate that in the military, you instinctively have to trust the person next to you 100% that they will do their job. They'll do their job to the best of their ability. So people don't die. People don't get killed. You know, the people don't get injured. But in corporate America, you don't trust anybody next to you. And that's the problem that I actually had was, you know, I trusted people. And then, well, you know, you come from the military, you trust. And if somebody ruins that trust, you never trust them again. Yep. You keep them at arm's length. Did you personally have any transition issues or concerns or adjustments when you left the Army?
I was a hot mess when I transitioned.
Oh, good. This will make for a better conversation.
Yeah, I was a hot mess. So I transitioned for family reasons. Okay. While I was on a promotion list, I had been selected for promotion to major, 04. What's that? Lieutenant mm-hmm. Commander in the Navy. And yes. Very shortly afterwards, I was informed that I was getting divorced. And I was like, oh, no. Wow. I had 3 small kids at the time, and I thought, I have kind of an existential kind of a decision to make. Do I stay with a military career that I always wanted and I was, quite frankly, pretty good at, mm-hmm. or do I have a relationship with my kids so they know who their dad is? Now,
yeah,
that was a tough decision to face, but quite frankly, it was an easy decision to make. The kids win. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just how that goes for me, right?
Yeah. Well, military is hard enough for a married family.
Absolutely.
You know, when you go through a horrible thing like separation and divorce, and now you got, like you said, your kids become, you know, your kids know who you are, but there's no fatherly relationship there. So
right,
I can understand that.
So, you know, I wanted to be as close as I could and do the best I could for the kids. And I decided the only way to do that was to get out of the military. I got out with $121 of unpaid leave, mm-hmm. divorce debt, no idea what I was going to do and no idea how to do it. I was a hot mess. So there were many practical things that I had to attend to right away. Mm-hmm. You know, where am I going to live and how do I find a job? And geez, how do I pay the bills and, you know, all that stuff. But then I found also that there were these other issues that some of them surfaced right away and some of them just took a while for me to realize, you know, this whole issue of how different the civilian world, work world is and how different it operates. And, you know,
yeah, I still call it the civilian community, civilian world.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the issues of trust, loss of purpose, what am I going to mm-hmm. do? Where am I going to go? The issue of being alone professionally. Mm-hmm. You know, because what I found and what I write about, you know, sometimes is that in the military, everything around you has been built, developed, and grown to help you, your unit, your team, and your mission succeed.
Oh, yeah.
From how you're trained to how you're organized to how you're resourced to all the ancillary things that, I mean, that they get PXs and what's the Navy call them? The Navy exchanges.
Oh, Navy exchange.
Yeah, Navy exchanges. And there's family support groups and there's a religious support. And it's all there.
It's there.
To help you be successful. And then, boom, you get out.
The community's gone.
The community's gone.
Yeah.
All that support is gone. And, I, quite frankly, I never felt so alone as I did when I first got out. It was like, oh my God. And what I found over the years of working with military veterans who are, you know, facing or in the midst of transition is what I went through is pretty common. And what drove me to do the work I do now is to say that shouldn't be common. We need to help these folks better prepare for what they're all going to face eventually, either by choice or by circumstance. Mm-hmm. So that kind of is what got me to where I'm at.
You know, it's funny you talk about this, and I just, when you said you're all alone, you know, we kind of said it simultaneously, or I just realized that that's probably what the big issue was for me. Because I love just, you know, you get out of your rack in the morning, you go on a ship, you know, you got your duty and you go to work, everybody's there, and those people are family to you.
Right.
And when you're gone, you know, even going home on leave for 2 weeks, it's like, you're home for like 3 days. You say, I got to get the hell out of here. I got to get back to my real family.
Yeah.
That ends up being the military.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So how do you, you know, so how do you coach veterans? Well, let me do this first. So, you know, I just want to dig into this a little bit more, you know, very similar to individuals who are released from prison. You know, they have transition problems. They've been institutionalized, everything's done for them, their structure, when to eat, when to sleep, when to play. And obviously, I'm not saying that doing time is equivalent to serving our country, but, you know, and veterans do have these challenges. What's, you know, let's just, you know, I think we kind of talked around about it, but what's intrinsic in the progression? Is it that, you know, getting around, obviously, the community, you know, that's not there anymore. You know, is it that you don't know what to do every day? Is it that society or employers have really taken time to, and probably still aren't there, in catching up on military jobs and MOSs and rates and what you did specifically is and the comfort level? What are the, you know, the most, I don't know, 80 or 90% of the common things that you see during that process?
Yeah, so most times, not every time, but most times when I find what I find with transitioning service members is they don't know what they want to do. And I always correlate it to them. I says, you know what? Can you hit a target that you haven't identified? Now, I do a lot of work in the special operations community, and you know, that kind of targeting discussion, all that resonates really well with them. And everybody goes, well, how can you hit a target you haven't identified? But how do you expect to be successful in your career transition? So what is it you want to do? Where do you want to do it? What does good look like? And the very first step, once we get that on the table, the way we get to that answer is, who are you and what do you bring into the party? How do you define yourself? What are the capabilities you bring? What are the passions you carry? What's the experience you have? What are maybe some of the short poles in the, you know, the whole tent thing? What are your pet peeves? What are your priorities? And understanding all that so they can start to refine what that job or career target might be. We get through that. We'll spend a fair amount of time doing that. And then I'll get on to, okay, given all that, how do you define success? Mm-hmm. Do you want to be a CEO in a Fortune 500 company in the next 24 months in New York City? Or do you want to have a part-time hourly job in a nonprofit focused on animal health in Montana? What is it you want to do?
Right.
What does good look like? And a lot of times I find folks don't know how to define that or how to answer it. One, because they haven't had to, right? The military says, right, here's your next job and this is where you're going. And you can ask for...
Bill, I got to say, shit, where were you when I got out of the military? Oh, man.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's all good, man. That's all good. So the military career kind of points you in a direction for everything. And you can ask for what you want, and you're going to get what you get, right? And you're a good soldier, sailor, airman, marine, coastie, whatever, and you suck it up and you go do a great job, right? Well, that doesn't exist when you get your DD-214 after you leave the military. Now, guess what? It's an open world of possibilities. You can do anything you want.
Yeah.
But you don't have a way to assess, even become aware of the true breadth and depth of these opportunities, let alone assess what each one means to you and how it may fit. One of the things I do with transitioning service members and others, I do it with civilians too, is to say, look, career transition, whether
you know, for civilians, non-veterans, you're talking now about transitioning them from one industry to another, or
one job
or finding
to another.
Finding what they're doing. Okay, good.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wanted to go into that in a little bit.
Okay. So what I try to do is get people to think past the emotion, because it's a tough time. Whether you went voluntarily, or you know, you're part of a reduction, a drawdown, a redundancy exercise, whatever, you're no longer part of what you were part of, and that's emotional. That hurts.
Right.
It's scary. Yeah. It's, you know, it's all these things, right? What I try to help folks do is get their head out of that maybe emotional side of things and say, look, this is in its core just a really complex and impactful decision process. That's all this is. So you got to be able to identify the circumstance and identify what the problem is. Mm-hmm. You got to identify your facts and assumptions. You got to come up with potential courses of action. You have to understand the criteria by which you're going to make the decision. You got to do all that stuff before you can effectively engage with potential employers and say, boy, you know, and now I'm going to go interview well. Okay. So I try to get the, while I acknowledge the emotional circumstance of transition, I try to help people step out of that a little bit and go, use your great big brains and decision-making experience now. Now's when you need to leverage it. So,
I think about this, and I think in the military, you know, because I was on board an aircraft carrier when I was enlisted.
Which one?
And I was on the Coral Sea.
Okay.
I know your son's on the Lincoln. I think that's how you and I connected. And I mentioned that, and I mentioned that in the introduction. But, you know, I realized that when I was in the squadron, I was in an A6 squadron out of Oceania, and I went through a program in the Navy, got a scholarship and everything. I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a surface officer.
Okay.
And I realized, you know what? You don't have to worry, like we said earlier, you don't have to worry about community and family and resources, because it's all there. The only thing that's changing is what you're going to do in the military and what your focus is. You don't have to worry about all the ancillary things. Where am I going to go shopping? What am I going to do? You know, taxes. How am I going to get paid? You don't have to worry about any of this
healthcare
stuff. So
costs,
I guess it,
all that.
It makes that a lot easier to do that in the military than outside. So, yeah, when you talk about transition, it's kind of funny. I got to tell you a story about a friend of mine, Jeff. Jeff and I, we've been friends since 1985. We were enlisted together. And then, but in 2000, I think 16 or 17, he was a commanding officer of Pearl Harbor, Hickam.
Okay.
And he retired as an 06, excuse me, put in, I believe, total of a little bit over, he did 30 or 31 years. And he went to work for a company that hires a lot of military. And I remember him telling me the story. He said, Hank, I went in and we were doing some sort of event at the office, and somebody was waiting for Jeff to set up the chairs. and he said, I kind of looked at him like, hold it, you want me to do this? And I knew exactly where he was going. I was like, dude, he had command of a minesweeper and a destroyer, and then had Pearl Harbor. And now he's in an environment, no longer in the military, and you have to set up chairs in a room. And he was waiting for somebody else to do it. And they're just looking at him and say, okay, let's set up these chairs. So it was a great story. And I think, you know, I don't know whether, you know, he just kind of came to the realization that, wow, this is quite a dramatic shift from what you're accustomed to. And, you know, I'm thinking, you know, all the stuff that you got is, you know, making your way up through the ranks to, you know, all the way to 06. The thing is that all the privileges that you got was not because of you. Okay. You got to where you are because of you.
Right.
But all the privileges that you got, you got it because of the position you had. It's not you.
That's right.
As soon as you leave, you know, people seen Schwarzkopf at the airport years ago. He's carrying his own briefcase. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not the team around him anymore. So, but it was such an interesting, you know, perspective, especially from him. So, you know, I know when I was in, you know, the general public's view when I went initially in the mid 80s, you know, the public's view of the military was not very favorable, mm-hmm. As it is today. You know, I remember, well, I know in the late 70s in Norfolk, Virginia, there were signs that said, "Dogs and sailors, please keep off the grass." But, you know, the public more or less thought that you joined the military because you were lost. You were not smart. Mm-hmm. You couldn't make it in society. And I actually had an in-law, and, oh, crap, this is in recording now, but I don't care, who was not the least bit shy about his lack of understanding of the military and made me feel very uncomfortable, mm-hmm. Until he realized that one of his best friends actually was in the Army for 6 years and what a great experience it was. And wow, how that mentality changed a little bit. And even very recently, you know, I had a CEO and he had a very undesirable view of those who had served. He's like, "You people can't think on your own. You know, everything's got to be structured and done for you." And I thought, you know, that was a demise of any personal or professional relationship that may have existed. I just looked at the person and said, you really don't have a clue, nor has probably anybody in your family ever served. So have you seen this? I'm sure you have, because I can probably hear you nodding. So you see this from your perspective and you see it. Confirm with me, you've seen it from corporations and probably veterans you've worked with and maybe through your own life, haven't you?
No, I absolutely have. You know, on the point of, you know, the privilege comes with a position, you know, I struggled mm-hmm. with that a little bit when I got out. Now, I wasn't a installation commander or anything, but, you know, I was a commander and I had been a battalion and brigade level staff officer. And, you know, I was mm-hmm. used to having teams around to get stuff right. done. I wasn't moving a lot of chairs myself.
Right.
And I came out and it's a great example because I remember people looking at me going, "Well, it's your job to move those chairs." Literally.
Yeah.
It was a great example and I lived it. So that's one big issue and huge challenge. The other side of it is, you know, the bias and perception that non-service members, non-veterans have is – it's amazing and it's very real and it can be very impactful whether you as a transitioning service member know it or not. And I write about that a bit in my book, but you know, the whole issue of service members are, you know, just robots and we can only follow orders and we're too rigid yeah. and this and that. You know, I use an example. I was a company commander in Somalia and I had small teams out in various different places doing things and as far as 70 kilometers away. You know, they were not just around the block.
Right.
And, you know, I had to get around and you know.
They were remote employees, as they refer to them.
They were remote employees, yes, in very dangerous environments, right?
Right, right.
And, you know, the one team I remember, three folks, the gentleman in charge was, I think, 23 years old. And mm-hmm. the other two were younger. These are not senior people. They were not special operators. They were good soldiers, but they're not some superhero, right? If they right. didn't understand, and I think the Navy may use the concept of the commander's intent, okay? Mm-hmm. If they didn't understand a commander's intent, what I needed them to do and what good looked like for their mission,
right?
If they didn't understand that, all the discipline and all of the structure and all of the only follow orders would not have gotten the job done because I'm
right.
not there. So, and I think it's a perception on the part of individuals. And quite frankly, I think it's reflective of problems in the civilian work world. I don't know. I've been in, you know, corporate America. I was in for 22 years in big, mm-hmm. complex global companies, right? And while there are great examples of effective leaders at all levels, you know, leadership is very different. And I don't know how many times, you know, I would see people who thought they were leading well by, you know, micromanaging, basically, mm-hmm. and that not doing anything to listen to their teams. They're not doing anything to train their teams. They're not doing anything to properly resource and prepare their teams.
Right.
And then they go say, you know, go forth and do. And by the way, if you fail, we're going to fire you. Well, that's a big difference than the military. I knew when I put my teams out, they were highly trained. They were highly developed as a team. They were resourced to the maximum extent that the supply chain would allow. And that we had reliable communications back and forth so they could, one, do what they needed to do, and two, stay in contact with us so we could shift and I could listen to them and say, hey, you know, what do you need? What are you doing? And if things are changing, we can shift on the fly. And
right,
I think so many times civilian employers miss that. You know, there was a famous leadership author years ago. He said, you know, if you really want to know what's going on in your business, go talk to the people that do the jobs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huge difference that I think sometimes employers don't recognize in themselves when it comes to military. But they're just too eager to go, eh, you guys only follow orders. Well, you watch too many movies, guys, you know?
No kidding. Yeah. You mentioned the word micromanaging. What a poisonous word that is.
Oh,
in corporate America. Cause that just, I think that further just, you know, supports the, you know, the lack of trust and confidence and commitment of those that work around you. You don't trust that they can actually do the job that you want them to do. You know, I think Stephen Jobs had a saying, and, you know, I'm not putting myself in that position, but, you know, he says you hire intelligent people and you let them do things. You don't hire intelligent people and tell them what to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, if you hire someone who's qualified for the job, let them do the job. And I think maybe people are scared to maybe learn from others and say, oh, this person doesn't have as much experience. I'm not going to learn anything. Well, I think as soon as you shut your mind like that, you start having problems as a leader. So let me ask you, what should an employer, if anything, do if they recognize, you know, this, I guess this inability for someone within the company, you know, whether they treat them poorly as it relates to the military or what should it perhaps even a business do if they say, listen, we want to, and you mentioned this a little bit briefly in the beginning of the discussion, what should a business do if they recognize, hey, you know what, we have one or two veterans here or we have none, but what is it that they should do so they become very familiar with those types of individuals that may have an interest in being affiliated with the company?
Yeah. Okay. So a lot of good questions in there. First, relative.
And I don't remember what I said.
That's
so
okay. I'm going to remember what I remember. We'll just roll with it.
Good. All right. That's fine.
Excuse me. Excuse me just a second.
Sure.
Okay. So one thing it's important for employers to remember regarding veterans is that they are not one homogeneous group. Every veteran identifies with their military experience a little differently, okay?
Right.
For some, it's a huge part of their being. For other folks, they don't ever want to see it again because it was a bad experience. For other folks, they love being recognized. Other folks, you know, just, you know, a thank you is all they need. And other folks really want to bring to bear additional skills and capability that they learned through the military. So it's a whole range of potential responses when you try to engage on a different level with existing veteran employees. You know, the one shoe does not fit all, right? I've seen instances where employers are trying to do a great thing by recognizing veterans, you know, for Veterans Day or whatever. And some of the employees were like, I didn't want you to share that. That's not your story to tell. So one, be very mindful that veterans react and relate to their military service very differently. The second bit, and I kind of addressed it a little bit earlier, I think, is if you're considering a focused strategy for improving or growing your veteran hiring and employment practices, you really need to have a decent understanding of your current business culture, okay? I don't mean, you know, what kind of work do you do? I mean, what's the culture really? How open are people to new folks coming in? And how do they recognize, how much do they care about the veteran circumstance and the potential value add? And how aware are they? And if you've got a situation where people are, you know, as a whole, actively anti-military, anti-veteran, mm-hmm. you may have some work to do before you become an attractive potential employer to veterans.
Right.
And before, if you happen to bring them in, you're going to have some work to do to optimize the value add and the results and the add to the culture. I'll tell you a quick story. I hired an Army Lieutenant Colonel who had retired, a great guy. He was going to be a training manager for us. And he was doing a bang up job. And he knows I've told this story before, so he's okay with it. I ran the succession planning for our global company, the whole program, mm-hmm. right? Well, we were talking about successors to our own positions in this particular forum. And two of my colleagues, fellow VP level heads of HR and talent in this global company, when they asked who my successor was, well, I said, well, it's this gentleman. And two of them, there were more than two in the room, two of them scoffed heartily. They said, absolutely not. No way. Like, wait a minute, why not? Well, because he came from the military. He didn't come from industry. He has no idea how we operate, and he'll never be able to do what you do. I go, I came from the military, and I've been highly successful here and in other companies. I don't get your point. Like, well, you know, right. he's a veteran. He won't get it. I mean, that was where.
That's a nice assumption.
Yeah. And they were just vehement in their position. So, you know, we had to deal with that. Say, you know, that's, and I, quite frankly, I took them offline and I said, you know, that's pretty discriminatory kind of talk here. So let's understand mm-hmm. the root of this bias and see if we can get some logic in your head. So fast forward now, I left that company and he is now filling a role that's not quite as big as what I had when I was there, but pretty darn close. It's substantially what I had. And he's knocking it out of the park.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, he knocked it out of the park despite the negative bias. I'll suggest that the organizational acceptance to him, not him as a person, but him being a veteran, not coming from the industry, had mm-hmm. they not had that, he could be doing even more now.
Right, right. Yeah, I think at some corporations, or businesses, firms, whatever, they just... You know, there needs to be a consciousness or an awareness that of better understanding their employees. And I think it's also what I've seen in our industry is that what's becoming much more important. It's not just how much you're going to pay me, what are you going to do for me, blah, blah, blah. It's does my character fit into the culture of the organization?
Oh, absolutely.
Because if there's not a fit, your tenure with that company is 3 to 5 years at best.
At best.
At best.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a true cultural fit between culture and character, then your probability of having a longer time or a more committed associate, employee, you know, colleague, whatever descriptive you want to put, mm-hmm. is much greater. And I think since a lot of people, you know, veterans, there is that sense of commitment and responsibility and also transparency to whoever they're whoever they're working for, or whoever they may be helping out.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I developed over my years of, you know, leading HR and talent management is there's really only two reasons why employers hire somebody. And it's proven to me anyway to be a universal. One, they're going to hire the person that has convinced them that he or she is the most capable to do the work they need done. Mm-hmm. And two, they're going to hire the person that has proven themselves to be most capable to be a great fit and add value to the team. That's it.
Right.
Everything right. else in this whole transition process, in my opinion, are just paths to those two answers.
Right.
You know, and I've sat right. on far too many, interview panels and, you know, sitting in with or either being the decision maker for a particular hire or sitting with the hiring manager at multiple levels where it's really come down to that. You know, because this right. candidate, is they really the best to do the work and are they going to fit well and add value to the team? That's what it boils down to.
Right, right.
And
right.
I think employers can get in their own way if they have biases against any group, veteran or not, any kind of particular demographic or whatever. If they say, mm-hmm. well, you know, I just don't think that they're going to fit. Really, based on what? Well, they were a veteran.
Oh. Yeah, well, you just clearly stated, I don't think. Well, that's right. You don't think.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I know that, you know, and this is this kind of question came to me just because of personal. And, you know, some do not recognize, you know, their transition thoughts or problems or issues until years later, like I did. So how do you work with veterans that are already employed, but may need, you know, maybe they just realize, you know what, I went into this with my focus here. I define success as putting as much money in the bank as possible. Mm-hmm. And you've been maybe successful at it. Perhaps, you know, you haven't, or perhaps you defined success a long time ago as something completely different. But you look back and you say, you know what, I have just, you know, for the last 10 years, I haven't been happy with what I'm doing. Is how do you help veterans in those situations also?
I do.
You know, and I know we touched on it. So yes, I know you do. So
yeah,
talk us through that process and what you do for those.
I do. And it varies depending on the circumstance. If this is someone who's already employed and mm-hmm. their issue is performance levels on the job and they want to perform better, that's a different kind of intervention. And that's a performance improvement thing, right? Okay. Where I help them figure out, I coach them to better performance in a job that otherwise they like. They're just not doing well, okay? And that could include a lot of different interventions. But if it's someone who has gotten in, they've landed a job, they go, I think this is what I wanted, and now I'm there and going, yeah, this isn't it. Either the job didn't turn out to be what I thought it was, or my criteria for success have changed, right? Either way, then I work with them in yet a different set of interventions. And really, what I do at that point is sit down and go, okay, what isn't working for you? What's broke? And then we actually do some like root cause analysis and problem solving kind of stuff going, you know, what is the problem? Well, the problem is I'm not being paid enough. Or the problem is that even though I'm being paid enough, the culture is horrible here. Okay, well, mm-hmm. let's talk about that. What about the culture? Because, you know, culture is a big word. Well, I just don't feel like I'm part of the team, or, you know, they don't move fast enough, or, you know, so could be anything, right?
Right.
Then we really have, it's a diagnosis thing at first. You know, what are we solving for? And once we figure out what we're solving for, then we get on to, okay, so what does that mean in terms of what do you want to consider doing next? Mm-hmm. I don't mean just in the job, but what are the next actions? Do you want to stick this out and try and help improve the circumstance? Or do you want to say, you know what, this is not for me, and now I know why it's not for me. I think I want to do something. Well, okay, let's go figure out what that something else is and what success criteria are going to be required for you to go, yep, I'm going to jump. I'm going to make the shift. I'm going to make a change. That makes sense?
Gotcha. Yep, makes sense. So tell me what's unique about your work. I mean, you know, we talked about TAP in a quick call here, you know, Army Transition Program, and there's a multitude of, you know, veteran service organizations or VSOs. Mm-hmm. So for the listeners, tell us, you know, speak to us about what qualifies you to do this work and how is it different from those resources?
Yeah, no, and that's a great question. And I want to say, you know, there are, the TAP program is very good at what it does. Okay, it's DOD managed and it's congressionally funded. And it does, I say, my opinion of it, it's technical, tactical work to give you a basic awareness of how to get out well. Mm-hmm. And a few ideas about what to do well relative to job search. TAP is broader than just job search. They do a great job of helping veterans, service members about to be veterans, understand what they need to do relative to the VA. I don't get into that.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay. So it's a broader thing than just employment. But I will tell you, relative to employment, my experience, and after talking to hundreds of transition service members, they leave a lot on the table, right? Veteran service organizations are also very good too in the particular area that they focus in. Mm-hmm. What differentiates me from all of that is, number one, I am a transition veteran. Mm-hmm. And two, I spent 22 years on the employer side of the desk, not just being an employee in the civilian world, being the guy who ran the HR and talent management programs, including recruiting and talent acquisition and selection and so on and so forth, right? So my unique value proposition here is that I have insights from the employer side of the desk that many people don't have. And my background for that is as a transitioned veteran. So it's a really unique perspective and one that I I don't hear get covered anywhere. You know, employers oftentimes they get together and they want to have a job fair, or they want to do veteran hiring, but they aren't doing much to know more about veterans. I can help them because I've been a transition veteran, right? Or I am a transition veteran. Much of the discussion on the individual veteran side of things focuses on how do I get out and where might I land? And the discussion is often driven by folks who wore the green or blue uniform for a very long time and have not been in the civilian world to a great degree, maybe a few weeks, maybe a few months, maybe in their first job, but they're passionate about helping their brethren come out well, right? And that's good. The other side that happens with this, especially I find this in the TAP program, is you find really well-intended folks that come from the civilian community that have never worn the uniform.
Right.
And their jobs in the civilian community may or may not have been really big and robust and business focused. It might still be kind of first level technical tactical. I'm entirely different than all of that. So that's the value proposition for me. I can give insights to both sides of the culture gap because I've been on both sides for more than just 20 minutes each. I was 12 years Army, had a tough transition, 22 years in corporate America. That's credible time. That provides insight that not a lot of folks have.
Yeah. Well, that transitions perfectly to my next question for you that I had. You know, you wrote a book, Military Career Transition, you know, Insights from the Employer's Side of the Desk. I know was it last year debuted? I think, you know, number one on the new releases for, was it the, I think job the hunting. Category Amazon was what, job hunting, hunting. On Amazon. So tell us about your book, how it came to be, what it covers, and who it can help. And, you know, I was going to also ask you where you can find it, but you can tell us that too. Obviously, you just search Amazon, but I'm going to include a link to it on our podcast description.
Oh, great. I appreciate that. And I appreciate you bringing it up. Yeah. So the book came to be, quite honestly, as a product of the COVID period. You know, I was actually relatively new with my business when COVID started to impact how business was being done. And I found myself not out and about. I'm spending time in my home office with a whole bunch of post-it notes and other notes, looking around going, what am I going to do with all this?
Right.
And I thought, you know what, maybe there's something here. And I started to organize it and put it together, and out came a book. Okay. The book and
that easy, huh, Bill? That easy.
Kind of. It took about a year. It took about a year. And there were days I was pulling my hair out going, why did I ever start this? And then there were other days where it just flowed, right?
Right, right.
Part of it was the mission here, I thought, was to share insights. I've got these post-it notes and other notes going around. That's an insight. I got
post-it notes here too. I don't even think I could write a brochure with it, let alone a book.
So what I did is I took it all and I said, let's just create individual insights for what they are. Just take them, you know, individually and go, what do they add up to? So I had each of these, I boiled it down to 151 separate insights, and I formatted the book so it's sequential all the way from number one to 151 all the way through from start to finish. So it's an easy reference, right?
Right.
So I then took those and organized them in five chapters. One is general awareness of the business world. Mm-hmm. Our military veterans live in a different business environment, if you could call it that, right? They operate differently in a different kind of world. They've had no reason to learn the cultural issues and norms inside of most businesses, right? So I've got a section on that. I talk about the culture gap in the second section and what it is and its impact to both employers and veterans. I then talk about, I have a section about the transition environment itself. Because oftentimes what happens, people in career transition, whether military or not, they think about the world they were in, the job they were in, the company they were in, and they think about where they're going to land, and they forget that those are not next to each other. There's a whole transition environment between the two, and it's got its own set of players and processes and tools and techniques. So I spend some time talking about that because to effectively and efficiently make a transition work and land well, you have to understand the environment that you're going to plod through to get to that landing zone. The next section of the book talks about networking and how important it is and ideas about how to do it. And, you know, I created what I call a hierarchy of networking. I think, quite frankly, I think LinkedIn did people a disservice by calling everyone a connection.
Yeah.
You're not all connections. Have you ever ridden a subway in Asia?
That what?
Have you ever ridden a subway in Asia?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, in Asia, no.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it works anywhere, but the example is much more effective for me anyway. I've been in 32 countries. I've spent a lot of time in various countries in Asia. And what I notice is the subways in Asia, there's a very different sense of personal space. Mm-hmm. And you're bumping into each other and rubbing shoulders and, you know, with everybody, right?
Right.
And
there is no comfort zone. There's no,
right.
I've been to China. We spent 2 weeks in China for an adoption, but I realized people will stand very close to you and get into what we would refer to as our personal space.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And because that happened, you had contact with that person, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you have no connection to them.
Right.
So if you take that metaphor, simile, I could never keep those two things straight. If you take that and apply it to LinkedIn, you might bump into somebody figuratively on LinkedIn. Going, that's an interesting, that's an interesting profile. Or, wow, they're doing cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a contact. You reach out, make an invite, and they accept, and there's no further contact. That's a contact. For me, that's not a connection.
No, it's not a connection.
Okay. The idea here is to take that contact and with purposeful action, make it a connection.
Mm-hmm.
Reach out, say, hey, I'm really interested in what you do. And, you know, Hank, you and I weren't even contacts at first. And then we became contacts. Then one of us reached out to there and went, hey, wait a minute. I'm interested in what you're doing. And we started a discussion. And that discussion led us to the next level, which is a relationship. We have a manner of relationship.
And unfortunately, I dragged you into a podcast. So
I love it. It's a great opportunity and I appreciate it. At the very top of that networking hierarchy is a very small percent of the folks that will be in your world that are actually advocates for you. They are out there selling what you're giving, you know?
Right.
They are singing your praises. And Hank, I would maybe be so bold as to say I would consider you an advocate for me by giving this opportunity to talk to your audience. So,
sure.
So there's a contact, there's a connection, there's relationships, and then there's advocates. And unless you curate that, and unless you make purposeful stuff, it's really hard to get past the contact or maybe connection phase. Networking is about dealing with people. But anyway, I got really off track. That's the fourth section of the book. The fifth section of the book is all about talent acquisition, interviewing, and recruiting. How does it work? Mm-hmm. A little more process-oriented. So I walk people from this whole big conceptual thing about this is what the new world looks like to here's some actionable things you need to know if you're going to interview and interview well. Okay.
Gotcha. Well, wonderful. So this is the last question I'm going to have for you before we end off on a personal note. So you've been doing this for 4 years, but obviously you bring a lot to the table. And I want to find out, besides your services, so what are some of the other resources available for veterans that you have seen that have been very helpful and useful?
Yeah, there are many. Certainly, I think one of the most of it can be wherever you're at, your local veteran service offices. I'm in Ohio. Each county has veteran service offices that help veterans in multiple different ways. There's a whole bunch of groups out there. And what I would suggest, rather than giving a bunch of names, is to have any veteran that's interested, get online and Google, you know, veteran service organization
veteran
near
services,
me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
It's a huge thing. If your folks are not active on LinkedIn, veterans are not, I would suggest, and I'm not a shareholder in LinkedIn or anything, but it is a great way to get exposure to and get exposed to others in the field that you seek to enter. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're not on LinkedIn, you're really invisible. And there's a lot of groups available there too for veterans also.
There really are.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, since we started off on a personal note, I wanted to end there with a few personal questions. I think you're good with that, right?
Sure.
So, and what do you do to relax? What's that?
If I'm not good with one, I just won't answer it.
You just tell me. Say, "Hey, you know, shut up." So what do you do to relax, Bill?
Let's see. What I do to relax, I work out. I put a gym in my basement and I go downstairs and lift a little and get on the spin bike and all that. When I'm not doing that, and quite frankly, being up in the North Country, when the weather's good, I'm on my motorcycle. I am a Harley guy.
Okay. Yeah. I think you and I talked, I'm a BMW guy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. We can still be friends.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We can. We can talk about bikes for hours. So what's your greatest joy?
My family, without a doubt.
Your family.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
So either living or dead, who would you like to have as a dinner guest?
Ooh, wow. Living or dead.
Yep.
Wow, that is a great question. Honestly, Marcus Aurelius.
Okay. A Stoic.
A
nice.
Stoic, yeah.
A Stoic. Good. How about your favorite comedian? You're not getting in trouble for this. Don't worry
about it. Oh, my God. You might have stumped me on that one. I love comedians.
Yeah, you can say all of them. You know, if you enjoy laughing, there's a lot of good ones out there.
You know what? It's very rarely that people stump me, but you got me on that one.
Okay. How about your favorite writer? I mean, you mentioned Marcus Aurelius, and
right. Well, I love his stuff. In the context,
or Seneca, but yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
In the context of the work I do, quite frankly, I can read Jim Collins' work over and I have over and over and over.
Right. Okay. What would you be doing for a profession if you weren't doing what you're doing now?
I'd be in the military still.
Okay. And so what quality do you admire in others? I can almost guess this one, but I'm going to let you say it.
the word is used too often now, but I'm going to say authenticity. I don't like fakers.
Right.
I have very little patience for that.
All right. So favorite swear word or overused word? You'll have a choice there. The F-bomb. Okay.
Absolutely. On both counts.
So besides this being the last question, what are you thankful for?
I am thankful for opportunity. Okay.
Great.
And when I first got out of the military, I thought I had to seize and run any opportunity to the ground because it's the only one that would ever arise. And what I've realized over the years that there is, we are blessed with an endless well of opportunity. And I am clearly deeply thankful for opportunity.
Well, thanks for giving us those personal insights. But Bill, I want to thank you again for your time today and just sharing your insights. And, I think this is the first time I've had a chance to chat with someone that put some structure around the veteran transition process. So I really thank you for that. To find out more about Bill and his services, you can visit them at Kiefer-Associates.com. Please don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, The Chat with Hank, on Anchor, Spotify, or wherever you may listen to your programs. But Bill, thanks once again for sharing a portion of your day with us. I truly appreciate your insights and the conversation.
Thank you, Hank. I really appreciate the opportunity and the time we spent together.
Great. Take care, Bill, and with the greatest respect, go Navy, beat Army.
Okay.